You're warmed up again.
Furthermore, I'll wait for another question. Yes.
You said that there are some not to be a record of similarities in the book. So listening to your reading, it seems to me that you still seem to be very moved or emotionally involved in the book. So, I mean, is it that you go back or that you relive the things that happened in your own life? Isn't that tough to do for you? Could you agree to that impression?
Very much so.
Would you like to keep reading this?
I'd like to.
Go ahead.
But the other side of giggling is.
Yeah, exactly.
What about the play and the stories you read? It's turned away from more the autobiographical part to the ways as far as I think. Is that going more into your native side of native experiences?
The play? Night of the Trickster. It's the play was about rape, which I haven't, I haven't finished dealing with it in April Raintree, but it's also because it's such a harsh, serious subject. I had to put humor into it because it's, like I didn't want people crying away and things like that, and it's about healing, of course, too, trying to figure out, because there's never a simple way, a simple healing process, it's never simple, and it does take time and everything, it's, you have to write a play that tries to deal with a healing of rape, And it's not realistic, but you have to make it as real as you can in a play. And so in the play, one of the ways that I dealt with, that I took when I was, I had been raped, and one of the things I did was take karate, for a couple of years. So of course that had to go into the play, and that lends for part of the humor because, now I consider myself heavier. Well, because I used to be really skinny, I consider myself, fat now. So these women were larger, like me, and they were supposed to learn karate, and they're all middle-aged and out of shape, and they smoke, and so they gotta quit smoking and, get into shape so that they can help the main character with her plot of stopping rape. So it's basically about that, and there is humor that happens among the women and that, so it's not so serious. But going back to your question before is, yes, I get really emotional about, if I stop and think specifically about my sisters or my family, I guess it still hurts.
So it gives you a sense of fear and hatred and
That is so good, because how the opposite of that is, you can feel it rather than. And I think that maybe my daughter was more upset than myself when she read the end of the book, in terms of she said violence in this woman called Miss Tony, because she thought it was part of biographica. And then in the end, you actually say there's no similarity to people. And I think that's the kind of problems at that time. Was that because of your own personal development at that time?
You mean to go to continue with April's story after the ending? I'm not understanding.
Towards the end of the story, you say there's no similarity to anybody in this story.
Mm-hmm. Are you asking why I didn't go on with the story, or? Do you understand what she's asking?
Yes, she's asking. She's referring to a passage which I cannot find in the book. They say it's not autobiographical.
Where?
Oh, it's a nice edition.
But that's. Where it says, compared to the story, a picture and resemblance to people living or dead, truly important.
Oh, well, that's. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. When I say it's autobiographical in a way, that means, yeah.
I just found that by your point as your story.
Oh, you're wondering why I made it fiction instead of real. Sorry, like I said, I'm hard of understanding, hard of hearing and not too bright. But anyways, I couldn't write my real story because there's other people involved, and it was very important to protect, you know, like their privacy. I think as a writer, I always hope that I'm going to respect other people's privacy. I'm not going to write about people around me or close to me. So all these people who are in there, in any bad, you know, like, well, most ways, they're not real people. That was really important, you know, that readers don't say, oh, this must have been what the foster parents were like, or, you know, like that, because people tend to do that, right? And so it's really, I don't know, it's just really important not to use other people's lives or thoughts or whatever like that, unless they're in passing, you know, like maybe hearsay things I heard, like that I heard about this family that was like the DeRosiers, but I don't know them personally and I never met them, I just heard about them. So of course you add to that and you make characters up to meet what you need in your character. And the only... And the other thing that I used a lot was my own thoughts and feelings in that for April and Cheryl. So that I used a lot, you know, is because that was from me. Yes.
so you can take all the things in the book, if you look to be involved.
The thing about April is it wasn't hard to write it, you know. The actual writing of it, like the details of actual writing, I figured out like an outline roughly, and then I got a big drafting paper and put the months across the top and the years going down the side. And in each column I had something, what April was doing, and what grade she was in, and things like that, and it's the same with Cheryl. And so I could figure out what they were doing and try and tie it into my own time, because April's about my age, and try and tie it into things that happened. Like most, the main thing I remember is John F. Kennedy being assassinated. Well, that really affected me, but I didn't use as much, you know, the way it affected me, I didn't use a lot of that in April Raintree. I just more or less pointed it out because it was something that everybody was aware of, you know. And for going back into the family visits and all that, there were a lot of times, you know, that it made me very emotional. Well, like I cried, and but I would get excited because I figured, well, if I'm crying, I'm sure my readers are going to cry too, like, you know, like that. So it was just that that if I was moved, because if I'm moved in somebody else's book, it's because it's touched me very strongly. So I can kind of see the book objectively in that respect, you know. Like the family visits and all that, like I found it much harder. Once I started doing readings afterwards, I found that much, much harder than the actual writing, because then I found that a lot of passages, like to read in public, I found that a lot more passages would suddenly hit me, you know, and I feel very sorry for this character, you know, like she's like a real person. And I feel really sorry, and then I'd, start crying. and of course it's very embarrassing because nobody likes really, I don't think, to show their emotions in public that much, you know, like it's a private thing, but yeah, it still moves me. So I try and read the same thing over and over again because I know I can handle them a lot better, like than just opening the book and reading from another part. It's can be very hard.
Yes.
Because it's when I first started did a promotion tour, I was kind of complaining about, like, why do I have to do, you know, this stuff, you know. And Maria Campbell, who was one of the first and is still very well-known Métis writer, she helped me because, like, I stayed at her place, and when I was going through Saskatoon, and she told me, you know, you have to get out and talk to the people and, you know, like, essentially share with the people what you know, your experiences, because if it's going to help create understanding, that's, you hope that's what it's going to do, you know, like, so. The other thing is, a lot of times when people say, you want to do something, I say, sure, you know. So that's partly why I still do them. The ones I'm never going to quit, though, are the ones for younger, like, students, because a lot of students are taking this book in school, too. And I always try and do readings and talks with them, so it's, they're very important. Well, my sister died in October 1980, and she was living in Toronto at the time, and I was living in outside of Winnipeg. So I took a flight to Toronto, and on that flight I met an editor who worked for McLean Hunters and started talking to him, and I just told him I was going to write a book. I didn't tell him what about or anything. I just told him I was going to write a book. Because I figured, if I was going to write a book, if I told that to someone, then I most likely would, because I wouldn't just say it. But he told me to send him, he asked me if I'd ever written before, and I'd said no, I hadn't. So he told me to send him some short stories or something, and he would let me know what he thought of them, because he was an editor. And I didn't start writing until April 1981. Well, getting ready to write until April 1981. And I sent this short story. Like I wrote the short story first. It was like an Alfred Hitchcock type of story, and I sent that to him, and he wrote back saying it was sellable material, like it needed editing, but it was sellable, you know. So I figured out. So I put that away, and then I started writing my book, and that was how I got into writing. Like, well, that's how I got into writing this book, anyways. I think realizing, you know, like everything, you know, that April, you know, goes through in her book, like I came out of it feeling I don't have to be embarrassed about a drunken Indian maybe sitting on the, you know, public sidewalk or whatever. I don't have to apologize for anyone. And then too, because of the research I started doing, I started reading other Native books, like that were written, like that Pemmican Publications had already started, and they had Canada's Forgotten People and other books like that. And then for a while even, I became angry with everything that the white government had done, you know, like to Indian people, because I didn't have a lot of knowledge about that before that. So then I felt, I just felt I didn't have to apologize or, you know, be embarrassed about being part Indian. I don't understand the question.
Well, they're who are from, which I know I'm not Métis, Indian, part Indian, or whatever.
Well, I'm Métis, that's...
I'm Métis, and that's it. Like Cheryl in the book. I'm would like to know how first you know before you said you were ashamed, and did that change now?
Of course it changed, otherwise I wouldn't be here, you know.
And you still wouldn't say that your father would be amazing.
Well, I'm a Métis, you know, like in the way that my husband's German, you know, like we don't have to go around saying that we're proud of being who we are, you know, like I am who I am and I like it, you know, and that's all I can say, you know.
Seid ihr stolz, Deutsch zu sein? I ask whether they're proud to be German.
No.
Thanks.
He wants to be a Métis. Yes.
How was your book received in Canada? I mean, here in Germany, it's probably mainly a matter of universities and students who know this book here, I suppose. And was it different in Canada that it was a big consciousness raiser among white people too?
About the reception, how did people react to your book in Canada? Perhaps as part of an answer to what you just said, In Search of April Entry is coming out in the German edition from Peter Hammertaler in Wuppertal, and Hermann Schulz is the director of that publisher. It's coming tomorrow with a contract to sign. And so there will be a German edition of it, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of people will read it. Perhaps you remember that more than 10 years ago they brought out Jack Forbes, and it's in the third edition now. And a lot of people are still reading those books. I think there's interest in this. So I think although there's a time lag of about 10 years or so, I think people will read the book here in Germany. But so far, of course, the reception is limited. And now about the Canadian reception.
Canadian reception for... Well, for Native people, it I feel really good about their reception, because very often they tell me I've written their story, and the way I've written their story is purely on my own experiences, because I thought so many times you think you're alone in experiencing something. And because you don't talk to anybody else about how you're feeling or anything. And so I've gotten a lot of letters from students that I've gone to see up north, or people like that, you know, like they have very limited access to Native authors and that who go up north and talk to them. So it's... I feel like I'm invited a lot because of April Raintree, not because of who I am, but because of April Raintree. And it's like she's gotten me all over the place. And sometimes I wonder, oh, how did I get into this? And when I start getting nervous, you know. With the non-native, like I also go to a lot of non-native schools, and I'm really surprised and pleased by the openness and the willingness of non-native students to learn about Indian people and their problems and everything. And there's because of what happened in Oka too, you know, a lot of Canadians, non-Native Canadians, were more sympathetic to the Indian people because a lot of things they didn't know were happening, like settlements of treaty claims and all those, you know, like that have been delayed and delayed and delayed, you know, for years. The people didn't know about that. people to know about an awful lot of things. And I think books like April Raintree give them a chance to see another side to things.
What do you think about what people are learning about me?
I'm not really concerned about that, because there are people like Lenore Kishik Tobias. She can speak much more eloquently to that, and she has a real deep concern about that. As I think, as a writer, I don't feel really strongly. I think people, you know, ought to respect other people, period, and, you know, and their rights. And if, you know, respect was the ruling force, then there'd be, I don't think, any problems at all.
Again, I'd like to thank you for coming here, and I'm very glad you also mentioned Maria Campbell. I wanted to say that that Leaky play there came from Maria Campbell, and I promised her that when she came to Germany, we'd hoist the flag on our pole, and we put up the pole. Then Maria was scheduled to come here about a year ago, and she couldn't make it, but we've had three opportunities so far to hoist that flag for some meeting guests, and it's like you said, it's a sort of teaching process that you're involved in. You're teaching us and we're learning from you. And I think that is what Maria had in mind when she said, you've got to go out there and talk to people. And thank you very much for coming and sharing.